habit. Fake it till you make it. Noah Webster, in the 1828 dictionary, defines habit as a disposition or condition of the mind or body acquired by custom or a frequent repetition of the same act. Habit is that which is held or retained, the effect of custom or frequent repetition. Hence, we speak of good or bad habits. I experienced two different high-level instructors, and by high-level, I mean that they were teaching classes because they wanted to do it, and their real profession was what they were teaching. In other words, they had been successful in performing acts and events, which were what they were teaching about. A lot of times one thinks of a teacher as someone who teaches as being someone who cannot do it. And that is very common, that teachers have not had any practical experience in what they are teaching. In fact, that is probably more common than not. Both of these instructors that are referred to are the opposite. They were very successful in what they were teaching before they started teaching it. Both of these instructors repeated several times a key point. They may do it a little differently, but they repeated it. And one of them explained why they were doing it. And they said that the human brain does not remember anything unless they hear it at least three times. And of course, they have all kinds of statistics on this, indicating how long the human brain is supposed to remember something based on the repetition, the interval between repetitions, and all that. But the other instructor said it best. He said, you will only remember what you do and do frequently. Frederick L. Rawson is one of the best of the best regarding success in Christian Science treatment. He defines treatment as the word used to indicate that form of prayer which is based upon right thinking, namely, thinking of absolute good. It is actively thinking of the world of reality, or the absolute, called by the theologians God and heaven, by scientific men, cause and its manifestation, and by the metaphysicians, mind and its ideas. In thinking about these definitions, the theologians basically do not understand what God is all about, and they refer to it as something rather esoteric, something up there, not realizing that it really could be a way of life if one understood it more clearly. But I must say that Mr. Rawson himself stated that don't fret about what someone else thinks God is, because everyone knows so little about it that we're not in a position to try to judge. And of course, as I mentioned, he was one of the most successful of all practitioners. And by practitioner, I mean one who is in the business of giving treatments for the benefit of others. Although a real practitioner is one who is treating oneself, one's own thought, one's own consciousness, and then anyone that they come in contact with automatically benefits from their whole atmosphere of how they conduct their thoughts and their thinking process. Getting back to the definition of treatment, when Mr. Rawson refers to the scientific men consider it cause and its manifestation, what he's really saying, I believe, is subjective and objective. In other words, there's a relativity involved. Whereas with the metaphysician definition of mind and its ideas, that is not relative in any respect because it considers mind and its ideas as one. In fact, I believe what he probably really means is mind including its ideas. For an idea cannot be separate from its source. And mind being the source, then the mind and idea are one. Returning to the definition of habit, what we're really referring to here and about repetition and habit, and when the title of the treatment is called Habit, Fake It Till You Make It, what is really intended there is to practice right thinking and right action, right speech, until it is automatic. In other words, it would be unnatural not to be having correct thinking and correct thoughts, correct speech, and correct action. In other words, practice it until it is absolutely automatic. So one is translating anything that is contrary to godlike qualities, such that it would be like Jesus, where he automatically saw the perfect man. Mary Baker Eddy refers to Jesus as seeing the perfect man, and she qualifies that with in science. So in science, Jesus saw the perfect man, whereas others saw something entirely different. They were seeing someone with an ailment, maybe blind or sinful or leprosy, whatever the problem might be. But Jesus was automatically translating to the spiritual man. And of course, that healed the problem. Mary Baker Eddy states on page 129 under the section of science of chapter 6, which is entitled Science, Theology, and Medicine, and it's under the paragraph title of Truth by Inversion. If you wish to know the spiritual fact, you can discover it by reversing the material fable. Be the fable pro or con, be it in accord with your preconceptions or utterly contrary to them. And she states under the paragraph titled Moral Courage in chapter 10, which is entitled Science of Being, and these are all from Science and Health, reason is the most active human faculty. Let that inform the sentiments and awaken the man's dormant sense of moral obligation, and by degrees he will learn the nothingness of the pleasures of human sense and the grandeur and bliss of a spiritual sense, which silences the material or corporeal. Then he not only will be saved, but is saved. Referring back to the counterfact, as Mary Baker Eddy said, was necessary in order to heal disease, or she says it's required to cure it. Frederick Rawson, through his scientific study and treatments, which he did for himself for the purpose of helping his patients, he did treatment on the common ailments. And I didn't realize there were so many, but and this encyclopedia covers the counterfacts for 1,315 ailments. And the title of the book is Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. By the way, all the references referred to are available for free download from the website, mbeinstitute.org. And if you feel inspired, we certainly invite you to make a donation. But there's no obligation. Everything is free. Now, regarding these treatments of the 1,315 ailments, it is suggested that you take the nuts and bolts that Mr. Rawson provides, which are what are in these treatments, then adjust the language to you individually in a custom manner. Repeating words is like a broken record. It does not deliver the music. But if one internalizes it, individualizes it, and makes it a part of them, then they can speak whatever words that they like to use on their own, or a mix of words that one might think of along with the words that, or an abridgment of the words that Mr. Rawson provides. In essence, one needs to make it their own. And one can do that a little better each time that they practice treatment, because each time they're learning more about the truth. And as one listens, they will really hear ideas come to them which will fit the need that is at hand. When I record a treatment like what you're listening to now, typically I know almost nothing about what is intended to be said. I only have an idea that comes that there's a need for a particular topic. It may be something I've discussed with a dear friend, or it may be some news article. It may be from a speech that someone gives, but it usually comes when I'm doing something unrelated to study. And it just comes to the surface. And then I rush over to my computer system and I make a note sufficient enough so that I understand the concept that came to me in just a few short words or a couple of phrases. When I say Mr. Rawson was very advanced in his work, he is the only one that I'm aware of who has been able to overcome the belief of time. And I'm referring to his healing work. He calls it retroactive healing. And by that, he means that the healing takes effect prior to the time that he is aware that there is a need for the healing. The very first time that he thought about doing this, he received a letter from his sister. I don't know how far away she lived, but the communication came by letter. And she was requesting Christian Science treatment. Mr. Rawson, by trade, was an electrical and chemical expert. And companies came to him that could not solve problems because he was able to find solutions. Because of his expertise in those areas, he was very methodical in his way of thinking. Because as you probably realize, those are very technical fields and require a strict discipline in the way one would conduct themselves in going about solving a problem. It's not like moving into a new home or even having a home that with an empty closet that has no shelves or any kind of structure in there to keep things organized, whether it's a place to hang your clothes on hangers or whatever. And so you may have no choice but to just put everything on the floor, at least until such time as you could bring order to it. Well, with solving electrical or chemical problems, there has to be a structure. And so his years of practicing that, I'm sure, gave him an automatic process where he would bring order to whatever problem there is and solve it in a methodical manner. When he received this letter from his sister, he had already had success in healing, and that's likely why his sister trusted him to help her. But he had often thought about how would it work if he could overcome the belief of time. And so he thought he would try it on his sister as his first experiment. He thought of Christian Science healing as experiments. He would try something to see if it worked. And if it did, then he would use the idea or the method or the procedure. So he put his methodical method of translating things from matter to spirit to work. And without giving away the surprise on exactly how he did it, because it's available for you to read it and hear it directly from him. But basically, the result was that he had contact from his sister at some time later, and she said, "You know, it's amazing. After I sent the letter to you, I was immediately healed." She said, "I don't think you would have even had time to receive the letter. How in the world could this have happened?" And he realized at that time that his first experiment was successful. And he stated that in the meantime, or since that time, he had performed hundreds of healings, whereby the effect of the healing took place before he received any request to be involved. One thing is very clear about healing that Mary Baker Eddy makes plain, and that is that we must start with God. And she makes it very easy for us by giving us several different definitions of God. And of course, she speaks about God and the qualities of God throughout the entire textbook of 700 pages. One of the definitions that I refer to often is that God is the great I Am, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. If one looks at that definition just in a cursory manner, they can see it really covers a lot of territory. The first four words, the great I Am, and the words I Am, only three letters for both words together, are in all capital letters. If one wants to learn more thoroughly the qualities of God and what they mean and how they interconnect with each other and how they interact with each other, I believe that it would be beneficial to study the book by Helen Wright entitled Your Divinity Revealed. That book includes seven specific chapters, one chapter on each of the seven synonymous terms for God, which, as mentioned before, are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And there are other chapters in the book, but there are seven specifically on those seven terms. One chapter on each term. But under mind, she indicates that the creativeness of God is a critical feature to think about. And one could think about the creativeness as being the enlightenment, like an idea all of a sudden comes to the forefront. And this is the kind of thing that I was referring to previously when I might be involved in another activity and all of a sudden a thought occurs to me about something that I should record. For the purpose of directing thought to a particular topic to record and publish on the website. If one thinks about creativity and how that's related to enlightenment, and then if one considers that mind is the intelligence and the wisdom and the knowing by which whenever we are enlightened with intelligence and wisdom as knowing as qualities, that those are basically interconnected with creativity. In other words, we want to make sure that the creative idea is going to be an intelligent one, it's going to know about what the idea is, and it's going to be wise about how it is used. And all of this comes to thought prior to taking any action. So the action would be an intelligent, knowing, and wise action only if the creative thought that occurred was coupled with the intelligence, wisdom, and the knowing about that enlightened topic. So one quality of God connects to another quality of God and interacts with it, and this goes through a series of things to make it complete, and that along with the action provides success, and success is then measured as performance, and performance is power, because power is a measurement of success. And Mary Baker Eddy states that the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. So in other words, we are not born with power. Power is something that is developed as our thought is developing, the ideas as we listen for these thoughts to come from the one infinite divine mind. And the ideas then are connected with the qualities of intelligence and wisdom and knowing. And that's put into action. And that brings forth success. And if it doesn't bring forth success, that means something is missing. We're missing something in the intelligence or the wisdom or the knowing. Bicknell Young was a very popular practitioner back in Mary Baker Eddy's day. I believe he came on the scene at the very latter years of her time visible on Earth. But he related in a class that he taught to others who were learning to be teachers. And he taught in that class that he had people that would come to him about troubles with their business. And he would find that the most common problem was that they did not know their business. Now, principle is a quality of God. Everything operates by principle. Whether you're riding a bicycle, driving a car, preparing food, doesn't matter what you're doing, skydiving, car racing, ditch digging, walking, running, talking. If we're going to do a perfect task in a perfect manner, then we're following some kind of a principle. And we may not even think about it. It may be so automatic, but there's a principle involved. Even on the human scale. So he is stressing the point that we need to know what we are doing. And that's the knowing of God, if we listen to God, and if it's an activity that is wholesome and we're trying to do a perfect task in a perfect way, then we need to be listening for the knowing of God. We need to be using the intelligence of God. And those two together will give us the opportunity to have wisdom. But if anything is missing, any element, whatever it is, and I only mentioned three, but if there's any element missing, then very likely there will not be success. And therefore there won't be performance. Therefore there won't be any power that is generated as a result of all the steps that have been taken. Because something is missing. Maybe many things are missing. Maria Brunson, another one featured on our website, is very proficient at explaining the kinds of things I'm talking about here, about how the elements of God's qualities fit together and how one needs to backtrack when they are at a certain point, if they're having trouble, to see what element, what quality of God is missing in the way they're doing something. Very helpful to be disciplined and structured in the way one thinks and the way one conducts themselves in everything they do. It brings much more pleasure because it provides harmony and balance. And it removes the risk of chance. And that automatically brings an up and down result. A deviation from the standard of God. To finish that definition of God, the great I am, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, and also all-loving and eternal. So, if there isn't any love involved in what we are doing, if we're not nurturing it, and we're not being loving in our conduct, and I'm talking about on a human scale, in other words, being considerate to all those that are involved, being tolerant, being forgiving. And by the way, what do we need to forgive with other people? Are we God? Are we the authority on who is right and who is wrong? Dale Carnegie was very successful in advising people how to have successful business. And he said, you better be careful when you criticize someone on something, because tomorrow you may be enlightened and agree with them instead of disagree, which is what you might be doing today. So he was very much promoting the quality of humility, because he's seen many times where he had disagreed with the way something was being done, and he later changed his attitude because he realized that he was wrong. He now saw a larger picture, which proved that the other individual was the one that was correct. One of the biggest problems that I believe is common is that when there is a problem, there is a tendency to be myopic and focusing on a very small part of the possible big picture. There was a college class one time, and the professor walked in with a white sheet, and he hung it up on he had a string fixed up there to go across the viewing area for the students. And it was a white sheet, and it had a little black dot in the middle. And he said, what do you see? And they were kind of scratching their head and wondering, well, what in the world is he doing giving us a sheet with nothing on it? You know, there's nothing here to see. And then one student noticed that there was the black dot, very small, tiny little black dot in the center. He said, oh, there's a black dot. I see a black dot. And the other ones paid attention, and they started looking harder, and sure enough, the whole class ended up seeing that black dot. That's what you want us to see, they said. You didn't think we would see it. You thought we would miss it. But that's the black dot. That's got to be the important thing about what you're teaching us. And he said, that's the opposite. He said, when you have a problem, you're probably focusing on the little black dot. But if you want to solve the problem, you have to look at the big picture. Einstein made the statement that if one wants to solve a problem, they need to think at a dimension above where the problem was discovered. If they think at the level of where the problem is, they'll never be able to see the solution. He was asked if he had 1 hour to solve a problem, and it was a matter of life and death. If you solve the problem, you'll be able to live. If not, you won't. I don't know whether it was an atomic bomb that was going to go off or what the deal was, but you know, that was the story. And they said, if you had 1 hour, how would you spend the time? He said, I would spend 55 minutes thinking about the right question. and then I would spend the remaining 5 minutes solving the problem. So preparation. Are you seeing the big picture? Are you getting in another dimension when you need to solve a problem? If you've been in an accident, broke your arm, whatever. If you just feel really badly and you don't even know what the problem is, are you thinking about the problem? Are you thinking about the black dot? Or are you expanding your thought to wonder, why is this experience facing me? Why am I confronted with this experience? And it could very well be something totally unrelated to what the symptom is. Totally unrelated. Mary Baker Eddy said, if you let something bother you, it will go to the weakest part of your body. And it'll show up there. Totally unrelated to what the real problem is. The real problem might be your festering hate about someone, for example. Or you're very concerned about the government, of what they're doing. They're going to start a war. Or they don't know how to manage the money. And we've got tremendous inflation. Or whatever it is. There might be a lot of dishonesty in the government. Or in a company that you're involved with. Or maybe you've been a victim of being censored because you were speaking the truth. And the ones who made it difficult for your life didn't want the truth to be known because it would implicate them. Maybe there was an election. And who you thought was the most qualified, most honest person was defeated. I mean, it could be anything, but the chances are that the symptom that is affecting you and getting your attention may be very remotely connected, so remotely connected that you can't even make the connection. Like the dot was so small on the sheet that was what you were sure you had to focus on because you feel a pain or you're unhappy about something or someone. If two people on the opposite side of planet Earth are looking up at the same object in the sky, and they keep focusing on that, and their thought comes closer and closer to that, or let's say they're in a rocket, and they're both going up in the air, but they're focusing on the same thing, they're going to get closer and closer to each other. Now, they'd probably have to be closer to each other than on the opposite side, because if they're on the opposite side, one is probably seeing a bright sun and the other one is seeing a dark sky, because it's going to be night one place and daylight in the other. But let's assume that they have a similar amount of light so that they're both seeing the same thing. If they both focus on something that is in the distance, then they're going to get closer and closer to each other. Mr. Winslow, another very successful practitioner on treatments and healing, he wrote an article on the brick, the bicycle and the brick. And he said, if you are riding a bicycle, and this was, you know, he again was 100, 150 years ago, or not, maybe not 150. I think it was around 1900 or 1910 up until, I think he left visible form in about 1950 or so. But anyway, he said, imagine you're on a bicycle and there's a brick and you're riding down a road and there's a brick in the road. He said, chances are you're going to look at that brick. You're going to focus on that brick. And he said, you know what's going to happen if you focus on that brick? And he said, most people do this. Most people focus on the brick. He said, you'll run right into the brick. And of course, running into a brick on a bicycle is not normally a good experience. We must not look down, and that's what we're doing if we're looking at the problem, but we must look up to the one incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind so that we can get the big picture. And Mary Baker Eddy makes it clear, we better start with God. What is God? So if we study about these terms and what they mean of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, then the more we know about those terms, the more we can think of them automatically, in other words, a habit. So in other words, fake it till you make it. Keep practicing. Keep thinking about and learning about and practicing these qualities until they become habit, until they become part of you, until they are automatic, that you translate whatever experience that you are facing, that you automatically lift your thought to what these qualities are, what they mean, and how you can apply them. Like was mentioned earlier in this recording, don't just read the words that Mr. Rawson offers us on those 1,315 ailments, but research, determine what they mean. And don't use his words, although he has no objections to it, but of course the point is that they're not going to mean something really significant to one unless they make it their own. Here's something that is very good to keep in mind in our thought, and this is from Science and Health chapter 12, which is entitled Christian Science Practice on page 403, and the title to the paragraph is Errors, Power, Imaginary. Errors, Power, Imaginary. You command the situation if you understand that mortal existence is a state of self-deception and not the truth of being. Mortal mind is constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions. And it will continue to do so until mortal error is deprived of its imaginary powers by truth, which sweeps away the gossamer web of mortal illusion. The most Christian state is one of rectitude and spiritual understanding, and this is best adapted for healing the sick. Never conjure up some new discovery from dark forebodings regarding disease and then acquaint your patient with it. Who do you think our patient is? Is it the person that maybe is a friend that said, I've got a problem and I understand from what you've been reading that you might be able to help me? No, the patient is not a person. The patient is one's own thought, one's own consciousness. I attended a church service one time, and there was someone that gave a testimony, which for you who are not familiar with Christian Science church services, on Wednesday evening, it's usually devoted to part of the time of giving testimonies where one relates their own experience. And this lady stood up, and she was a practitioner, Christian Science practitioner, that her profession was giving treatments to people for the purpose of assisting in healing. And she said that she had a patient come to her and had a certain problem. And I don't think she even gave a description of what it was, but I don't know, doesn't matter. The point is that she said, I knew that I had one thing to do, and that was to clear my thought about the situation. In other words, she didn't talk about healing the person. She talked about cleaning out of her own consciousness the thought that the problem could be real, that it could be a part of her own consciousness. Forget about the patient. She wasn't concerned with the patient. She was concerned with what she thought about the ailment. And she said when she was able to clear her own thought and justify the fact that that could not be real to God's idea, couldn't be real to man, the man that God created, then the individual was healed. She didn't have to think about the person because the person was already in thought when that individual came to her for assistance. So she could forget about that person, and she needed to. Like Mary Baker Eddy said, when she got Mary out of the way is when she had her most successful healings. And she goes ahead and describes some very dire situations that she healed when she got Mary out of the way. So we have to get everyone out of the way. The Bible states, I believe it was Peter that said, God is no respecter of persons. A lot of people think that God is a person. In fact, a lot of people think Jesus is God. But they said they like to refer to Jesus as their personal Savior, their personal God. And Mary Baker Eddy has more respect for Jesus than most people. In fact, she has total respect for Jesus. And she says he was the greatest man that ever walked the earth. But she refers to him as our exemplar. He's the example. That's the standard. And what was his primary quality that he focused on that stands out? Of course, he had them all mastered, obviously. But I think if there's one term out of the seven that he represented so clearly, it is love. Love. He didn't tolerate evil. He threw the table of the money changers over. He didn't have any respect for evil. He didn't tolerate it. But it wasn't the people, it was the activity of evil that he absolutely would not tolerate. And he proved it by reversing it and healing it. Noah Webster defines the word seeing in his 1828 dictionary as the ability to judge well. Now that's a relative definition, in other words, from a human concept. And then he says, in Christian context, it means perception in the absence of judgment with a view to obtaining spiritual direction and understanding. Now, he was a very Christian man, and so he often quoted scriptures to back up the proper use of a particular word he was defining. And I believe it was something like 13 languages that he learned in order to prepare his dictionary, because English was not the origin of much of the English language. So, the absence of judgment. In other words, get Mary out of the way. Get yourself out of the way, myself. God is no respecter of persons. To give you an example of how one might individualize something in a spiritual statement, the scientific statement of being is one that is commonly used for ailments as kind of an automatic thing to go to, as a go-to source. And of course, if we want to be scientific in the way that we approach healing, then we need to be methodical and structured. And she terms this the scientific statement of being, which means that this is how we can become spiritual. This is our roadmap to spiritual being, to spiritual existence. I used the scientific statement of being when I had the belief of a growth that was continuing to increase in size above my right eye on the exterior of my face. This is the only thing I used, was the scientific statement of being. And the only time that it really occurred to me was when I was in the restroom, either shaving or taking a shower, because I didn't really have any occasion to look in the mirror otherwise. And taking a shower, when you dry off, you know, you're running the towel over your face. And, of course, shaving, you're looking in the mirror at the face, if you're a man. So those are the only times that I thought of it. And those are the times that I applied the scientific statement of being for this particular situation. So I will relate to you, even though this was a long time ago, I will relate to you how I used it, because I remember that very clearly. And I use it to this day for various things. I will give you two versions. One is the simple version that I used at the time, and this was a long time ago. I've done a lot of studying since then, and therefore have learned more about what God is and what the synonymous terms mean and how they work together. So I will give you the version that I used, And I haven't heard anyone else say anything about this, so it just came to me to do it. And very frankly, I didn't know what else to do. I'd never even realized what a treatment was. I was born and raised in Christian Science, and so probably my parents, and primarily my mother, probably because my father was in business for himself and very busy there, whereas us children were home with my mother, our mother. So she probably took care of everything. And as a matter of fact, when we were in school, there were four of us children, and we all had perfect attendance. And the only ones at the entire school, it was a school for 12 years, same school. So everybody knew everyone by the time they'd been there, you know, a couple of years. And we were the only ones out of the whole school where the whole family had perfect attendance for the whole time at the school. So I know that this was effective. I don't mean what I'm going to tell you now, but I mean the fact that Christian Science works, because we didn't really have any days off, period, for any kind of illness. And to this day, none of us have been to any kind of medical facility for health reasons, for a cure of any kind of problem or anything. And for the four children, mother related to me, he had a midwife, to come to our home and assist when there was the birth of one of the children, my sisters and myself. Okay, now, keep in mind that the problem was the bleep of a growth above my right eye. So, this is the best I can remember exactly what was said. I'm sure this is it, because it was very simple. The first sentence, there is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. And what I said instead was, there is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in a growth above my right eye. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. A growth above my right eye is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. A growth above my right eye is unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man cannot have a growth above his right eye, for he is spiritual. Now, the way I use this today, after a few decades of study, is more like this. And this is extemporaneous, as this entire treatment is, except for looking up some of these references that were not memorized and where I wanted to provide the page numbers. But now I would do it something like this. I would start off with the definition of God. And this is what I do, because I still use this as one of the many tools in the toolbox of treatment for myself. I would start off with a definition of God that is from the recapitulation chapter, and it's the first part of it. I think it's around 465 or something like that. It was, what is God? The whole chapter is on a question and answer theme or structure. What is God? The answer is that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And then I would go through the things that I've kind of mentioned, where I'd say that mind is creative. It's all intelligence, all wisdom, all knowing. That enables us to have action to bring results. And spirit is the only substance. It's flawless, transparent, pure, therefore reflection. Soul is sense. And since spirit is the only substance, then the only senses we have are spiritual senses. So we have spiritual seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. And this means that our seeing is spiritual discernment, where we know the difference between right and wrong. Our hearing is spiritual understanding, so we can understand what we hear because we're seeing with spiritual view. And our feeling is divine consciousness. So we are addressing our spiritual consciousness in our feeling. It's not an emotional feeling. It is a spiritual feeling. And our smell is intuition of character. And that character is the character of God, which is pureness, perfection. And our taste is the relish of truth. No variance from truth. No error therein. No mistakes. The Bible in Genesis 1, in the latter part of that, I think it's around verse 25 or 6 or 7, it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion." So he says, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. We have to be involved. It's not a passive situation. We have to be involved. We have to let the spiritual qualities of God be reflected in us. And then it refers to God blessing us. And it says to be fruitful and multiply. Well, we have to let God bless us. And how do we let God bless us? By glorifying God, by living the qualities of God. That's what life is, living the qualities of God. And Mary Baker Eddy interprets in the beginning as being in the only. So the only creation, the only existence that ever was, no time. Time is here and now. No past, no future. It's right now. Because everything is in coincidence. So then I would say something like, the belief of a growth above my right eye is not fact, but fiction. Because it is a belief that man can be flawed, that I can be flawed. But this is a lie. A lie is the father of itself. And therefore there is no basis to believe such a thing is real. I reject the whole thought. Kurt Russell, the actor, when someone asked him about his life and his movies, he said, well, my life is real, but the part I play in a movie, that's fantasy land. Well, we have to separate fantasy land from reality. Human life is fantasy land. Ailments, ups and downs. A deviation from the standard of God, that is fantasy land. We have to look at it as fiction, not fact. And then I'd probably say something like, I'm an idea of God, and therefore I reflect these qualities of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. These qualities are perfect without a single flaw because they are the substance of spirit, which is purity, flawless. And as an idea of mind, I reflect the perfection of these qualities, the flawlessness of spirit, the only substance. So there can be no life, truth, intelligence, or substance and a belief of a growth above my right eye. Even though it appears as real, it is illusion. I think of it as the word fear, false evidence appearing real. I'm not going to accept it as being real. It's illusion. There can be no growth above my right eye. There can be no defect on God's idea. Spirit is what's real and eternal, not a belief of some defect. And that's final. That's my final conclusion. I'm not going to vary from that 1 centimeter, 1 inch, 1 little piece, whatever the smallest measurement of mathematics is. Whatever many number of zeros one wants to put to the right of the decimal point before they put a 1 at the end. I'm not going to believe in it one bit. I refuse to believe in it. And I'm not going to look at it. I'm not going to check it. I'm not going to feel it. If I have to, I'll let my face go wet. But I'm not going to do anything to think about it. And I've shaved enough years, I'll shave without looking in the mirror. Because I'm not going to give a suggestion the pleasure of trying to convince me that it is real. And here's a thought that came to me. Mary Baker Eddy stated this, and I'm reading it, the quotation. I just looked it up. It's from page 222 from Richard Oakes, which is Recorded Statements by Mary Baker Eddy in a book that is commonly referred to as the Blue Book. And it says, "Remember to keep your own doorstep clean. Always keep your medicine chest in order. The greatest blessing you can bestow on anyone is to know God governs him. It is more difficult to demonstrate over the personal sense of a patient than to heal the disease." So that has to be our focus. And what is our medicine? Truth. Truth. And how do we administer it? Through mind, divine mind. And how do we keep things in order? Through principle. Principle. And love is the plan and design. Principle is the system and structure. And they work together with mind, which is the intelligence and the wisdom and the knowing and the action and the enlightenment of the idea. And that brings about performance, which is success. And we must remember that the lubricant of love is a requirement. Otherwise, we have friction. The lubricant of love makes everything operate with success. Amen.